From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Governor Pritzker has announced he will run for another term. Now we know his running mate. But that's just one of the key races that we're eyeing in Illinois as we take a look ahead at the jockeying for political offices. That's coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Professor Emeritus, and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime State House reporter and observer. And our guest this week, the Chicago Tribune's chief political reporter, Rick Pearson. Rick, it's always good to have you back on the show. And by the way, happy birthday as well.
Thank you, guys. And a happy holiday week for you as well.
Thank you.
So, Rick, I'm going to start with you. Last week on our show, we talked about J.B. Pritzker. He'd made his announcement that he will try for a third term. We still weren't sure who was going to be running with him. Juliana Stratton, his current lieutenant governor, she has announced she's going to run for the U.S. Senate, which we'll talk about that race a little bit later on. So this week he decided to announce his running mate for 2026. It'll be Christian Mitchell. He's a former state lawmaker, former deputy governor. What do you think about this choice?
Well, I think it's an interesting choice, and one for two reasons is, you know, there were a couple of downstate people that had been mentioned in the mix. Interesting that he decided to go with somebody from Chicago, but also really somebody who, even though he was a couple of years removed from the Pritzker inner circle, I think was still valued very much as an inner circle kind of person, loyalty choice here. I think he certainly has the experience being deputy gov, also being a former state legislator. And of course, you know, the interesting thing, of course, is I'm not so sure that we'd all be hovering over this, the weight of a decision of who a lieutenant governor candidate is going to be, if it wasn't for the fact of, you know, Pritzker's demonstrated interest in potentially seeking the presidency in 2028.
Charlie, what did you think of this choice?
I thought it was interesting. I mean, Christian Mitchell has a lot going for him. The fact that he's probably in a very, very good position if indeed J.B. Pritzker does wind up getting elected president to step in and take over as governor. I mean, that's basically the real reason that you have a lieutenant governor is to take over if the governor leaves for whatever reason. And in my memory, when Otto Kerner was named a federal judge, Sam Shapiro took over as governor. And then, of course, when Rod Blagojevich was impeached and removed, Pat Quinn took over as governor. But it's not a job where there's a whole lot to do, to be honest. I think, wasn't it, hey, Rick, you remember, who was it? Was it Dave O'Neill who quit because he was bored?
Yes. And I've always said that I thought of through history, given the constitutional requirements for the job, which is merely to take over if the governor, you know, dies or quits or can't serve, I've always thought there was only one person who was a candidate for that office that was truly qualified, and that's Mary Lou Kearns, and she was the Kane County coroner. So that way she could slap, check to see if there's a pulse, slap the toe tag on and get sworn in.
Mitchell is from the south side of Chicago. He's basically from the same area that Juliana's from, Stratton. And there's some grousing about, well, he should have named somebody from outside the city of Chicago, either from the suburbs or downstate. So there was complaints about that. And then there was also complaints that he should have named a Latino or a Latina, because the Hispanic caucus was very interested in getting somebody in there. But in the grand scheme of things, I don't think it makes a heck of a lot of difference, in that I would guess there's probably not more than three people in the state of Illinois who are going to say, oh, I will not vote for JB because he named this guy from Chicago to be his running mate and not this guy from, or this woman from Peoria.
Well, it's kind of like when Juliana Stratton announced to run for Durbin's seat. And right then, I would have, you know, how many people knew that she was lieutenant governor? You know, there's a vast amount of educational effort that needs to be placed in these campaigns and candidacies. I mean, I do think, you know, obviously picking a running mate from Chicago who is black, as Juliana Stratton was, you avoid any issues of, you know, any potential issues on racial diversity of the ticket. And of course, you could argue for a downstater just as a kind of a outreach kind of effort, except, you know, let's just be crass here. Where are the votes at? And the Democratic votes at? And outside those limited pockets of urban or college town, they're not downstate. So, you know, this is, but Mitchell is going to have to do kind of a sales job in those areas to explain who he is. And I think it's pretty clear, and that came up in some of the post-game questioning of the choice to Pritzker, is he's going to have to kind of flood the state and get out there and show who he is.
So, Rick, we discussed this last week, as I mentioned, talking about Pritzker's announcement. There had been a lot of speculation on this decision. Would he decide to run again for a third term, or would he decide to, you know, say, I've done enough and I'm going to concentrate on possibly, again, being a candidate for at the national level? I had always thought he was going to run for a third term. But people had started to change my mind a little bit. Was that ever in doubt for you?
It really wasn't, and going back many, many months when I had written a piece about this decision, it was clear to me from the people he was associating with or close associates of him that the plan was he would run for a third term, and that would it would be announced after session ended. And so it really, you know, I saw some of the chatter that was out there, and you know, obviously the biggest one is, in those many, you know, months that have transpired, Pritzker's national footprint has gotten bigger as a, you know, vociferous critic of the Trump administration and their efforts to remake the federal government and those effects on the states. And so the question really became, as some people noted, as long as he's out bad-mouthing Trump, does Trump take that out against him by messing with Illinois' finances and creating difficulties there? And it I mean, quite frankly, now with what's going on in DC and federal funding issues, he's messing with every state's finances. But those can create some severe hurdles for the progressive agenda that Pritzker has set out as he campaigns for a third term.
Yeah, and Charlie, one of the things Pritzker, I think, will stress when he, if he does decide to run for president, certainly in his reelection, is how the state's finances have turned around since he took over. And, you know, that give it another year from now, we don't know what's going to be happening. And like you said, whether or not the Trump administration decides to play more hardball with the state of Illinois on releasing money. So one of his biggest selling points could turn into being a liability if if the financial picture just starts to falter.
Yeah, and I don't think it would be, it wouldn't be a personal liability for him, because it would not be anything that he or the state of Illinois has done. It would be something that was brought on by Washington. As a matter of fact, there was, I think, the governor's office a couple of days ago announced that, according to their calculations, the president's bill, if it passes the House, with 1.2 billion or 1.2 trillion dollars in cuts, it would cost more than 500,000 Illinoisans their health care coverage and put about 427,000 people at risk of losing food assistance. And the decimate of the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, the food stamps, would cost Illinois 1.2 billion. And the governor says it's going to be very hard to recover. The state of Illinois can't cover the cost. No state in the country can cover the cost of reinstating health insurance that is today paid for mostly by the federal government. And he also said he wouldn't be surprised if hospitals in central and southern Illinois close because of the bill. And as a matter of fact, I've seen other stories, analyses saying that kind of the irony is that a lot of these cuts are going to really hurt red states, particularly rural areas where hospitals may be forced to close, where people will lose the benefits that they've enjoyed under the Affordable Care Act, under Medicaid for many, many years. And this reveals, I guess, my progressive tendencies. I just think it's a horrible bill where you're cutting benefits for poor people, people who are disabled, for veterans, to basically give tax breaks to folks who really don't need them.
Let's turn our attention on this governor's race to the Republican side. Haven't heard a whole lot yet. I know there's a couple of people who have talked about running and even announced a candidacy. But, Rick, is there anybody that you're hearing about that might jump into this race?
I would say yes. I'm hearing some names, but not to the point that I'm confident to relay those names, because I don't think it's going to happen in many cases. It's really strange to me. You know, here we got petition passing for the March primary of next year. It starts August 5th. I mean, literally, you know, we're a month away. You've got the state fair coming up. James Mendrick, the DuPage County Sheriff, is the most noteworthy candidate for governor. I mean, yeah, there's certainly, you know, chatter about a member of the downstate Republican House Freedom Caucus. There's some chatter about maybe a couple of township committeemen in Chicago. But, you know, this close to petition gathering, and not that major party candidates have that much trouble getting their petitions done, but it just seems to me the dearth of discussion in the Republican Party about a candidate is really very interesting and a reflection of where the Republican Party now stands after, you know, Darren Bailey and the effects he had in his candidacy on the party. The fact of Ken Griffin, who was the big funder for Aurora Mayor Irvin, and how that $50 million investment went up in flames in the last Republican gubernatorial primary. It really seems like a reflection of a political party that's really trying to struggle for relevance.
And what is the issue there, Rick, as far as, is it just that the Republican Party has gone more far right, that a moderate can't come out ahead in a primary? I mean, is that keeping some people on the sidelines?
Oh, it definitely is. And you know, even as much as Democrats have made substantial inroads in the once Republican-rich collar counties around Chicago, it's still, the suburbs have always been a key factor in Republican politics as well as statewide politics. And we know that the voters there in the suburbs are more moderate, and that they are not adherence to the Trump discipline. And so, you know, that's why we've always talked about, you know, candidates that have been successful in the past, like Jim Edgar, couldn't win a Republican primary these days just because of the Trump factor and the polarization of politics in our current primary system.
And I would say it may be true for some Democrats as well. If you're not a little bit more on the progressive side, maybe a lot on the progressive side, you may have trouble as well. Now, that's where J.B. Pritzker, if he is wanting to be a serious contender for the presidency at some point, he does have those progressive credentials, I guess you would say. But what do you think his biggest challenge is if he wants to run nationally?
Well, I think there's a number of hurdles, and it's like, you know, we all do this for a living. I'm not sure that if you got beyond the Midwest that J.B. Pritzker is a name that comes to mind if you asked people or asked just regular people about potential presidential candidates. And so while he has been doing some of that, increasing his national footprint within the Democratic Party infrastructure, I think it's going to take, you know, much, much bolder moves. You can only do so many podcasts, and not everybody watches MSNBC or The View. You know, is appearance on Jimmy Kimmel, I think, was an example of more of the kinds of things that he's going to have to do to broaden that name recognition, that actually people start to give him a look. Now, of course, we're talking a long ways away here, and so much of politics and political candidacies change not because of anything the candidate did, just because of the circumstances of what the country is doing and what it's going through. But if you just assume where we are right now, I think it's more of a would need to do more of a broadening effort to put his name up higher on a list.
And Charlie, I would say that I'm not sure there's any Democrats out there that are that well known. I mean, Gavin Newsom's gotten some attention. A lot of this, the name recognition comes from Donald Trump. He actually, because he fights so publicly with people, he can put somebody into that spotlight and suddenly get them more well known. I guess Pritzker, that could happen with him as well.
Yeah, and I think at one point Trump said Pritzker was the worst governor in the country.
You've seen how Trump's attacks on Newsom was kind of getting criticized within the Democratic Party for speaking about the party being too focused on woke issues and things like that, and wanting to go more center right. But then he revitalized himself in his criticisms of Trump, and Trump kind of revitalized him as somebody that Democrats are taking a look at.
One of the things that I think basically is going to cause any serious Republican candidate, a Jim Edgar of the future, to sit this one out is who's going to pay for it. As Rick indicated, the big money people have left. Griffin is gone. Bruce Rauner is gone. I don't know what the Uhlines are going to do, but the money that was available to Republican candidates in the past isn't here anymore. And if I'm a big donor, and I've said this before, if I'm a big Republican donor, am I going to pour any money into a governor's race in the state of Illinois, where the Democratic candidate basically has unlimited resources, and there really aren't any top-tier candidates to oppose him? Or am I going to take my money and invest it in Senate races, in states where the outcome could flip the Senate from Republican to Democrat, or in, what would you say, or in swing House districts. If I'm a big Republican donor and interested in making sure that my financial interests are protected, I'm going to try and put my money where I can preserve the Republicans, because I know that the Republicans under Donald Trump will protect my financial interests and not try and make me pay money for poor people who are too lazy to work.
Yeah, we'll get a return on investment.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, let me turn to a couple of other races that will be watched a lot here over the next few months. One of those, of course, is the U.S. Senate, and we have three Democrats who have announced for that at this point, the Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton, as well as two members of Congress, Raja Krishnamoorthy and also Robin Kelly. This would be to replace the retiring Dick Durbin. So among those, Rick, right now, does anybody have a leg up?
I think here again, this is a race that's still in formation. But I would say, if you just want to look at it on its face, I would think Krishnamoorthy, five-term member of Congress from Schaumburg, probably has the leg up. But part of that is because Raja's just been such a prolific fundraiser. And I mean, for the first quarter of the year, he raised $3 million. He just announced for the second quarter of the year, he raised another $3 million. I mean, he's probably got over $20 million in the bank. Juliana Stratton reported raising $1 million in the second quarter. Not an insubstantial sum, but certainly, I think for her sake, because again, being lieutenant governor and not necessarily having any major stature except being, part of the Pritzker Stratton team, that she's the one that needs money to market herself and explain really who she is and what she stands for. Robin Kelly, from Mattson in the South Suburbs, very interesting district. I mean, that district is, from the south side of Chicago through Kankakee and over by Decatur. I mean, it encompasses a lot of interests. her big focus has always been on gun safety, gun control type issues. She's has about 2 million in the bank, but I think right now in this field, she's probably the weakest of the three candidates.
And what about the Republican side there? I know Darren LaHood's name, for example, had come up, a congressman from Central Illinois. Anybody else, or is he interested? Anybody else?
I just don't. I don't buy it. And I think, Darren knows what kind of a year this could be in a midterm with the Republican Trump White House, and he has a district, congressional district for life. And is this really the time to try to take on a statewide race?
And
I don't
Charlie,
think so. Go ahead.
one of the things I found interesting about Raj is he's also highlighting the fact that, yeah, he lives in the suburbs, but he actually his family moved from India when he was 3 months old, and he was raised in Peoria. And he said in one of his quotes in his campaign literature, he's a son of Peoria Public Schools. So I don't know if that'll resonate with people outside the city.
I thought it was interesting because I had actually done a piece earlier about how, Illinois traditionally had kind of the upstate downstate dynamic split among its members of the U.S. Senate. And so I found it very interesting that coming out of the box, he was making his appeal not just as really a suburbanite or a Chicagoan, but as a son of Peoria.
Well, we also have one other race that I think is going to get a lot of attention as we go forward, maybe not so much this year, but certainly starting next year, and that's the race for mayor of Chicago, Brandon Johnson, a first-term mayor. That election will happen in early 2027. Mayor Johnson has had his problems, and his approval ratings have been pretty low from what I've seen. What's happening in that race? What are you hearing?
There's a lot of talk, a lot of jockeying, a lot of recognition that Johnson's approval ratings are very low, but no one's really made a commitment for the first step. And I think part of that is to try to get to see what this field is for the 26 midterms before going into 27. But I think we might hear more in the next couple of weeks. We've got Cook County Democratic slating for the 26 election is going to be going on. And then, you get those folks in a room and you can get all kinds of chatter going on about Mayor of Chicago. The other issue, too, is that I think there's a general belief that, while Johnson certainly would seem on the surface to be beatable, if there's a wide and expansive field where, you just need more votes, not a majority, he could certainly win again. And but he has strained kind of the parts of that coalition that put him into office. And so it will be very interesting to see, who kind of steps up to the plate again. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Paul Vallas ran again, although Vallas, once a Democrat, has really moved himself to more of the far right side of the equation.
Well, let's now go to our notes from the field. And Charlie, we'll start with you.
Well, as we noted earlier, we are now in a new fiscal year. And so the financial gurus have come out with the results for last fiscal year. And we'll start with the flash index. The flash index slipped slightly in June, falling to 101.9 from 102 in May. And that was reported by University of Illinois Professor Emeritus Fred Gehrerts. And of course, any reading above 100 indicates growth. And the good professor says the end of June marks the conclusion of the state's fiscal year and the first half of 2025. Despite recent political and economic turmoil, the Illinois economy has remained surprisingly stable. And so that was some of the good news. State Comptroller Susana Mendoza also noted at the end of the fiscal year, for the fourth consecutive year, the Comptroller's Office has released all pending bills to vendors from the state's general revenue fund and reported an end-of-year general revenue fund balance of $1.9 billion. Now, what that means is that instead of having bills laying around that are past due. They're being paid on time. Now, there are still bills that will come in over the next couple of weeks that will have to be paid out of the cash balance of $1.9 billion. But compared to where we were 5 years ago, it's really impressive. And lastly, the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability pointed out that fiscal 2025 closed with a general fund revenues totaling almost $54 billion, the highest annual total on record. And it's roughly $1.4 billion above the FY24 total. So that's good news.
All right. And Rick?
Well, I think I wanted to give a shout out, and I think everybody in the state of Illinois ought to give a shout out to my good friend and recently retired colleague, Ray Long, who departed the Chicago Tribune on Monday and put a 30 on more than four decades of a career in journalism in the state, working for the AP, working for the Chicago Sun-Times, working for the Tribune. He was working for the Peoria Journal-Star. He was the Tribune's State House Bureau Chief, who was my successor there in Springfield. Later went on to the investigative unit. Has really spent a career to looking to uncover the foibles and corruption that has occurred in this state. He and I did some great work together during the Blagojevich episode, and more recently has been his work focusing on former House Speaker Michael Madigan, including a book that came out shortly before Madigan was indicted and went to trial, really detailing the power structure of Mike Madigan for decades in the state of Illinois. So Ray Long deserves a salute from everybody in the state of Illinois.
Rick mentioned Ray Long's book, The House That Madigan Built. I was honored that Ray asked me to do a foreword for it, which I did. Now, I've known Ray, Lord, I don't know how long. Once upon a time, Rick mentioned he was with the Sun-Times and he was in the State House Bureau. And so I had the honor and the privilege of working with him. Without a doubt, he is a Hall of Fame reporter, investigative reporter. And besides that, he's a genuinely nice guy. And I've enjoyed knowing him and working with him for all these decades, because I think I was, if I'm not mistaken, I probably was there from day one of his career when he was in the public affairs reporting program. So I wish he and his lovely bride, Peggy Long, I wish them a long and happy retirement.
Very nice. And I also would add that, too, just one of the nicest guys you'll meet. And I've always considered myself fortunate to be able to read what he's been reporting on. There isn't a harder working journalist out there. What a career he had. And again, I don't know he's done yet. I think we may still hear things from Ray as he moves forward. So again, congratulations.
Oh, you will.
Well, anyway, we're out of time for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.